So the Byzantine emperors really did cloak themselves in Orthodox symbols. And one point that I should stress, and this is especially relevant to the time of the Crusades, by the time the Crusades arrived, the classic Byzantine religious art, and I draw that distinction from private art, had triumphed. The images that we associate with Byzantine art were now the norm. Basil II, who was one of the great Macedonian emperors, this was the dynasty that ruled from 867 to 1056, a dynasty that sought legitimacy by upholding the veneration of images, icons, and also donating enormous amount of imperial money to churches, to monasteries, to schools, and really making orthodoxy, the orthodox tradition we associate with the Eastern Church today, the religion of the dynasty and the religion of victory, as we'll see in another lecture. So that's an important point to stress, that when the Crusaders arrived, they found a remarkably rich Christian architectural and religious tradition. In addition, Basil II, as all Byzantine emperors, commanded a really impressive professional bureaucracy and army. And this is a point I need to stress, because when the Crusaders arrive, they're coming out of a very different political and administrative situation. They are dealing with a situation where power has been localized, the so-called feudal system we'll discuss, whereas the Byzantine Empire retained the professional institutions of Rome. And that is a point I can't stress enough. This gave the emperor the power to tax his subjects. This gave the emperor the power to build a bureaucracy to administer his empire far more effectively than any Western European state. And some could even argue even far more effectively than the much larger Islamic empire. All that is a question under debate, but the Byzantine emperor could really get his revenues out of his subjects and impose his will probably more effectively than most monarchs in the Middle Ages. Greek, as I mentioned, was now the administrative language. The court was organized around the elaborate ceremony with numerous salaried officials, a whole hierarchy of special attendants on the emperor. Eunuchs were often designated as holding positions important. Eunuchs were preferred because they did not represent a threat. They had been mutilated. They acted as a shield to the emperor, so while the emperor might feed a discredited eunuch minister to the crowd, he himself was personally protected because they were often people of low origin or slaves who had been purchased from outside the empire. And this is a tradition that also went back to late Rome. All of these traditions struck the Western Europeans as very curious. And Anna Komnena, of whom I will speak quite frequently in this course, the Byzantine princess who wrote in the first half of the 12th century and gives us some of our most accurate descriptions of the Crusaders, constantly drops little hints and points along the way on how the Crusaders misunderstood the protocol, the ceremony, how they very often seem to react both with envy as well as some sort of self uncertainty in dealing with the Byzantine court. In addition to the Byzantine bureaucracy, there was also a very impressive army, although after Basil's death, that army declined quite rapidly. The Byzantine emperors, again, because they had access to their subjects, to the taxation, to a bureaucratic class, could maintain a professional army. This army has been subject to a great deal of debate in recent years, and not the least of it, in part, fueled by Western European perceptions during the Crusades. And I'll read a passage of a Western European's attitude of the Byzantine army later in this course. But put quite simply, the emperor had in effect two forces. He had a field army stationed in the city of Constantinople, often known as the schools, the scholii. These were late Roman regiments going back, in some instances, to the 4th and 5th century A.D. The Byzantine army had a tradition stretching all the way back to the Roman period. In many instances, these units could point to their origins under the Emperor Constantine or some other emperor. And this was extremely important. They had a sense of unit integrity, a sense of professionalism. They were subject to corruption, purchase of command, and all the like, as any military on occasion. In Basil's case, these forces were drilled to a ruthless level of professionalism. Also, there were important elite bodyguards foreigners who were taken into the imperial service and part of that field army. The most notable for Basel were the Varangians. These are the Scandinavians of Russia, mostly Swedes who had settled in Russia and came down the rivers of Russia, entered into imperial service, and reputedly Basel had 6,000 of these fellows. They fought in battle with the double axe. They were invincible infantry, and it is this infantry tradition that we'll see in Western Europe coming out of the Germanic tradition of fighting with axe and spear that Basel deployed.